Good morning, everybody. How are we? Great. Let's see, I'm missing my... Oh, here it is. So, real quick, around the room, what is the Lord teaching you in this class? This class of the prayer of David, where he's asking God to do a work in him so that he would be able to grow in him. What's the Lord revealed to you thus far that stuck out in your mind in the last 3 weeks that we've gone over? Anybody want to share? Anybody want to share before we get started? I don't like to be the only one talking up here.
I'd like to say the differences in, the differences in...
Thinking?
In thinking, yeah.
So last week we talked about the way we all process. Yeah.
If you understand that eliminates a lot of the contentions that you think you have.
Yeah,
because someone else.
Because people process things different.
That helps.
Yeah, and they're motivated to judge things different based on either logical or value based, and so sometimes we're questioning people's motives because they're coming at it from a different angle. So that's huge. That's huge. Anyone else? I like that. That's what probably my favorite too. Yeah, I see that hand. Won't you come?
You know, David was asking the Lord to search him.
Yeah.
And if we do that, then we also got to search ourselves. You know, what really do we believe, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times it's just surface, you know. I'm for this. But then if we stop and think about it, really, you know, how committed are we to that thought?
Yeah, yeah. Words are cheap, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's a... There's a famous, he's taken a pretty big impact on today's cultural, I would call him if you'll afford the language here, a secular prophet. Because he doesn't come from the church world, he comes from a different world, but he's speaking truth, and it is God's truth. And one of the things that someone asked him once is, well, do you believe in God? And he says, I try my best every day to get up and act as if there's a God. And they didn't like that answer. But see, he's a psychologist. And he says, what you will understand is what you believe, you will actually act out. It's one thing to say, I believe there's a God. There's one thing to say, I believe that elevator will take me up and down safely and get me where I'm going. There's another thing to step on that elevator and trust that it's going to take you where it said. Because if there's a fear that that elevator, or what about the engineering, or what about the cable, or what about, you know, maybe somebody forgot something, right? So they weren't satisfied with the answer, but when he unpacks it, it's like, oh, yeah, it's more than just I believe there's a God. Not only do I want to every day act as if and have this thought that I'm going to be held account of everything I ever, how I treated you, how I act, you know. So I thought that was great, and that goes along with what you know, we're asking God to search us, so we're going beyond just this surfacey stuff. And say, hey, I give you permission to get into my mess and just noodle around and stir things up. Stir the water up. See what comes to the top so I can skim it off. Anybody else got something that the Lord has sort of impressed upon you during this class before we get started on our third section? All right. So today we're talking about the third part of that prayer in Psalms 139, verses 23 and 24, which he says, and see if there be any contentious way. This is probably one of the more interesting components to this prayer right here, because it's very unique. So he's saying, what he's basically saying is, confront my hurt, make me come to terms with it. So when we're talking about the parallel between Matthew 16:24, where Jesus says, any man desires to be a disciple of mine, he must do what? Well, right here is where we're doing what? We're picking up the cross. Pick up his cross. Now, let me ask you something. Whether I acknowledge that I have a cross to bear, or whether I acknowledge I have hurt or not, does it change the fact that I have hurt? Does not acknowledging it and doing this make it go away? I wish it did, don't you? I remember when Reagan was just like my 26-year-old. He was just, and when he would get in a tight spot, when he would get in an area where he wished he could disappear, he would do this. I was like, what are you doing? He said, I'm disappearing. You can't see me. As funny as that seems now, right? How many times do we conduct ourselves that way? We're in a situation, we're at a crossroads, we're feeling something, we're being confronted with something, life has stirred something up, and what do? I want to get out of here. I hate tight spots. Anybody ever watch Old Brother, Where Art Thou? The barn's on fire. You know, I hate fire. Let's get out of here. I'm ready to run off. R-U-N-O-F-T. But the problem is what? We changed our perspective, but the reality never changes. And what David is doing in a very simplistic yet elegant way is saying, I'm tired of pretending. I'm tired of acting as if this thing's not there. And I'm saying, open my eyes. Let me confront it. So when we talk about, let's get into the first part of it where he's saying, see if there any grievous ways. Your passage might say is wicked. It might say hurtful. It might say there's all different types. And we'll get into what that word really is in a minute. What he's saying is, reveal it. Put it right in front of me to where I have to confront it. Put it in my way. Don't let me circumvent this anymore. I don't want a roundabout. I want to go right through it, you know. So he says, let me see. So here's five ways I would tell you that we can, the Lord is saying he'll answer that prayer. First, how do you see something? Where am I? I got too much stuff on me. Thank you. I knew it was somewhere. Help me out, Jim. Help me out. Help the boy out. In Psalms 119, if you want to write that down and read it sometimes, it's a very famous passage, Psalms 119, verse 105. What does he say there? Thy word is what? A lamp unto my feet, and a light unto my path. All right? So the first way that he can help us see or confront is what? His word. Not what my opinion on a matter is, not what I've been told by society, culture, the way I was brought up. You know, well, this is you, Terry, you don't have to deal with this part of your life because this you're a Wilson. And that's you're a Wilson. That's how those Wilsons act. Isn't that right, Tommy? We can't help it. You know? But the fact of the matter is, how does it line up with his word, right? It's the metric I go by. Number two, I have to do what? Be willing to get along with him. Get along and wait. And what I mean by that is nobody else, in private, by myself. How many has ever been in a situation in life where it's just hard to be alone? Boy, I've been there. I lived there for a season. Please turn the TV on. Turn the radio on, turn the sports on. Somebody entertain me out of this situation. Right? But you know what? What was I trying to do? Avoid seeing, confronting, right? And so we do that. And so he says there that if, and let me give you the passage there where it says here, Matthew 6:6, but when you pray, go into your room, shut the door, and pray to your Father in secret. Get alone. Get by yourself, right? Number three, oh, this is hard. This is so hard. When I'm alone with him, am I doing all the talking? One of the ways he will reveal to me is active listening, right? Active listening. My voice in Psalms 5:3 says, my voice shalt thou hear in the morning, O Lord. I will direct my prayer unto thee and hear thee.
Was that Psalm 5:36?
Psalms 5, verse 3.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Thank you for stopping me. Number four, I spent some time on this on the early part of it, is what? And I'm going to misspell this word all the time. So y'all, I'm going to try to spell it right. Is that how you spell counsel?
Yeah, good job.
Huh? Is that it? Okay. Because there's another type of spelling, and I always invert the two, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. And some people go to marriage canceling, and it's spelled like, yeah. I need canceled. No, counsel. You need counsel. You counsel, Terry. Proverbs 13:20 says, walk with the wise and become wise. When you walk with the wise, you become wise. It says, associate with fools, and what happens? Seth Godin says this, you are the sum total of five people you hang around the most. Now, I can't stress to you enough that God uses people, much to my chagrin. It's not the way I would have designed it, because I would assume just stay up here number one through three. Hey, God, me and you will work this out. Ain't no use getting Mary involved. You know what I'm saying? Me and you will work this out. Don't need Mary. But God says, no, we're going to get Mary involved. We're going to get so-and-so involved. We're going to get such-and-such involved. Why? Because maybe there's something that you got to humble yourself. Not that, you know. But, it's going to cause something in me to have to modify. And I hate that. I hate that. Man, he loves me too much to leave me alone, doesn't he? And then fifth and finally, he will confirm what he's saying to you. Whether you turn to the right, turn to the left, your ears will hear his voice behind you and before you. And it says this, walk in it. Walk, yeah. There's a radio program, Christian radio program, that actually uses that passage as their theme song. So if we yield to God, he's saying these are the five ways that he uses, that he will speak to say, this is your cross. Pick it up, boy. Pick it up. So I want to get into this right here, the meat of this thing, which is this right here. Because I find it interesting. How many in here has got a King James or New King James? What's the word there? On where it says, see if there be any, fill in the blank. What does your word say? Yeah. So it's real weird that all the various translations have some strange, well, not strange, but really different. The English Standard Version and some others say grievous way. See if there's any grievous way. But King Jimmy and New King Jimmy, his son, they say wicked. Another one says hurtful. Maybe your translation says that. One says offensive. Another one says, hurtful, wicked, offensive, and grievous. So I got them all right there. So your translations are going to say something like that. So what's the Spirit of God actually saying? Because if a lot of times if we focused on that word, what do we derive from it? Well, he's talking about holiness. Saying, am I walking in a holy manner? But if we look at the original Hebrew, we're seeing that contextually, it's more than just walking upright, holy, and sanctified before God. It has to be something. It is that. No, I don't want to take away that. It is that. But it's more than just that, right? So what is he saying to us? Just talk to me. Why all of those various words in the translations? What is it getting at? It means this. It's an actual Hebrew phrase that they're trying. The translators are trying their best to get their hands wrapped around. And as best as I can distill it for you, it's basically this: see if there be any hurtful behavior due to my wounded heart.
That's good. Yeah, that's good. Because I was going to say, confront the hurt sounds very like me. Hurtful is what you're doing to others. So.
Well, put it in the passage's context as well. Because he's saying at the first part of 139, you're all this, I praise you, I love you, I'm fearfully and wonderfully made, you know my thoughts, you know this, you know that. And then he pivots into seeing all the culture and all of society, and he's getting outraged by it. So it could be righteous, but all of a sudden something in him felt off because it compelled him to go here. You know, it's one thing to see, and if you're honest, you can't turn on any news, any media, anything without going, good Lord, what's going on with our world? Right? That is especially if you're a believer, especially if you believe in the things of God, you want His ways, you want people to enjoy and experience the goodness of God as you have. And you know, it ain't because you disagree with them on this or that and the other and you're trying to control people. You literally know this form of thinking and this way of walking leads to ultimate death, destruction, and your heart grieves. And so David's in the same boat. He's going, goodness. But then he catches himself because he goes, man, I hate these folks. I hate them with a complete hatred. It's in your Bible. He said it. But then the Spirit of God, search me, O God. Know my heart. Test my thoughts. And then he says, then it's at the crux because now he's getting to the motive of why this is happening. Because basically he's saying, see what hurtful behavior I am conducting and I'm engaged in that's due to my own hurt. Have you ever heard the saying, hurt people do what?
Hurt people.
Hurt people. But healed people do what? That's right. And the Lord, through this study here, has challenged me and sort of put me in a little bit of a hip check. You know, like a little block out, like, I got that rebound, right? There's a cliche I have used my whole life. And on the surface, it sounds great. But as I study this, I now understand how it can be misleading. And so when I say it, I'm not throwing arrows at anybody because I have used it hundreds, if not thousands of times. And the cliche goes this way. God never asked you to stop dancing. He just said to change partners. God never asked you to stop drinking. He just asked you to change bottles. Now, what that cliche means is that the world is offering substitutes for the real thing. Right? The crux of that thing is that the sin is not dancing, it's why you're dancing. The sin is not, the drinking and this and that. It's the mindset behind it. And you should be drunk in the spirit, not drunk on, all that. I get why the cliche is said, and that's the heart of it. And that's what I've always meant by it. But here's where the Lord has challenged me. And David is isolating it. God did not call us to walk a life of being able to cope. God has called us to a life of complete healing. And he didn't say, stop drinking, change bottles. And I'm not throwing arrows at anybody, or this is not a myth. But what he's saying is, become completely healed. You'll never have to cope again. Because I don't want you to have to walk around with a crutch. I want to take the crutch and let you walk with a strut. Because when Jacob wrestled with the Lord, yes, he might have walked away with evidence of a fight that just took place. But he walked away. And that's the point. You know, what at the heart of this matter, what David is really getting at is until Terry Wilson gets really serious about confronting, that is, literally seeing for it for what it is, all he can do is live a life of trying to cope. And the problem with the mindset that I was using in that cliche is this. This is really where it gets, if you want to dig a little deeper, how it even gets, Lee, this is, I mean, this is 3D chess. What I'm telling someone is all church, your relationship with God is, religion, praise and worship, the presence of the Lord, all that is a coping method. So I come to church, and if they don't get me emotionally intoxicated, distracted, feeling good, hyped up, if they don't get me tingling somehow, so they don't feel the hurt. Well, Charlie and him was off today. Oh man, Terry didn't land the plane today. He just up there talking about patience. And took an extra 15 minutes to talk about patience. My favorite line of that whole message. You notice there's always been a faith movement and not a patience movement? And he asked the question, why is that? No one answered. I'll tell you, it takes too long. That's why. But here's the point is this. What we do here is not try to cope. What we do here is celebrate our healing and what he has done and what he is doing and what he is going to do. God didn't call us to cope. God called us to be more than conquerors. So not only do we win, but we win with a little gusto. How is that? Because they're gonna see me in the winner's circle. They're going to shove a microphone in my face. And they're going to say, how'd you did it? And I'm going to say, the man on the middle cross. I have no idea. Because he said I could. Because it wasn't me. And that's what being more than a conqueror is. A conqueror that does more is like, I don't even know how I won. I didn't even realize how. I was outclassed. I was in a different weight class. My opponent was way more sophisticated. No way I should have won this. But God. But God. And so, when David prays, let me see my grievous ways. And the reason that translation is that way is because it's trying to capture that phrase of my hurtful ways that I'm behaving because of my own hurt. I tell you, when we can get real with that, what happens? What happens? The windows of heaven begin to open up, and there's not a demon in hell that can distract, that can discourage, that can taunt. Because now all of a sudden, we see reality. We see for what it is, don't we? So let's move on. Here are five, if you want to study this in your own time and ask the Lord, I just want to give you a roadmap here of some things that you could be praying as you pray this. Five areas of woundedness, of hurt and heart, that typically speaking, a hurt, a past wound, a past trauma is going to fit in one of these five typically, not always. I'm not establishing a doctrine here, but this is a good way to start. First one is betrayal. Very painful. Someone that you trusted that should have had your best interest. Someone that because of who they were to you, the laws of nature, the laws of God, the laws of ethics said they should have conducted themselves this way, and they did not. They betrayed you. That is a very deep, painful hurt. And that thing just don't come out with, you know, take two Tylenols and call me in the morning. Right? That's something that has to be worked out so that what he worked in, you can work out. Amen? Number two, abandonment. Forgive the spelling. I'm not on a computer, so I don't have spell check up here. I'm looking to you guys to be spell check. You were supposed to be taken care of. You were supposed to be looked for. You were supposed to be safe. You were supposed to be in an area, in a place that you could trust. And all of a sudden, you felt left alone. Like, where is the person, the people, the thing, the place? Where I am by myself. It's like I got left at a fire station in a basket, and I know nobody in life. I am abandoned. That is deep. That is hurt. Number three, rejection. And by the way, the reason we know these are the roots of hurt is because we know the five basic needs, psychological needs of people. One of the basic needs of a person is everyone has to feel heard. They have to feel connected. They have to feel like I'm validated. I'm here. You recognize me. I'm worthy of being in your presence. And rejection. How many's been in this place? Been around? You've seen this on people where it's almost like their countenance, they won't look up. They've been so beat down by life. They've been rejected. They feel like, who am I? This was one of mine. We'll just get real here. This is one of mine. I felt rejected a lot. I had a father, you know, say things and acted certain ways and left. And so, man, what did I do? Well, I made it a point that every sphere I operated in, I tried my best at all possible to be the best. Because I didn't want to be rejected. If I'm on a sales team, I'm a top salesman. If I'm on a basketball team, then I'm going to do everything I can to be the best. And if I'm not, I'm going to be the only one from my school that made it to this far. And I'm going to win because I don't want to be rejected. If I'm in a company, I'm going to be the top dog there. Where's that coming from? Why can't I be at peace? Because of a deep hurt that says I'm rejected. You're not good enough. You don't measure up, boy. See how this just influences your whole... Is being the best wrong? No. Can it be, though? Yes. It absolutely. It's all back to the motives, isn't it? Number four, feeling humiliated. I know someone as a little person. They were absolutely humiliated because of a situation. 7-year-old, and to this day, can't do certain basic functions that you would have to do as an adult because of that past wound. Now, they've walked through it, and they've got some healing, but guess what? Still walking with a limp. And it might always, and that's... But at least they know it now, and they can say, okay, this isn't because of who I am. This is who I became because of this right here, right? And they don't have to identify with it. Number five, and finally, injustice. You were hurt because someone just did something absolutely rotten that was just unjust. Treated you a certain way. You're the wrong person on the wrong side of the tracks. You boy, you girl, you black, you white, whatever the case may be, but there is an injustice that happened to you. And if you don't think that leaves a mark, that will leave a mark. The first several years that I was doing what I do now, I always overly apologized for my dialect and the way I carried myself when I was in a certain audience with a certain region of the country. Until a friend of mine that's from that same region said, why are you always apologizing for the way you talk? Well, I just know I sound... He says, what happened? I said, no, I didn't. No, what happened? And then I had to think back of how someone made fun of my southern accent from that area, and it stuck with me. So now, what am I doing? I'm projecting that bias on everyone. I'm thinking everyone from that area must feel the same way. Now, is that true? Absolutely not. But because I was hurt and wounded, what happens? I'm assuming this reality that the Lord's wanting me to confront so that I can see, so I don't wrongfully judge everybody in that area. How many times does that happen in our culture right now? Absolutely.
Because that's what's really, he's the one that's keeping me. We hear it, we say it, but I mean really, because as things get more, you have to realize, who is the Lord of my life? What is the Lord of my life? Do I really believe what I'm reading? Are you reading? He's the Word.
If you hit on something, I want everybody, because the Bible says to be wise as a serpent, harmless as a dove. So we got to know the schemes of the enemy. If you will look at the way modern day media, and I'm talking cable news, I'm talking online, I'm talking in every facet, how it's structured. If you see it, if you'll see this, you'll see it. It's basically structured in a silo for a group of people that all have the same past wounds. And so what they do, rather than saying, hey, let's confront those wounds and get healing, what do they do? They do like the snake in the garden. And what do? There's a reason why this word grievous is there. There's a whole grievance industry that basically trades on the fact that people have been hurt. And I'm telling you right now, I believe God has got a special place in a bad place for those who don't offer healing but want to validate. And you're right for feeling that way. Because those people, and you just point over to those people, it's awful. It's absolutely awful. Let's go on. So here's the thing. What are signs of a wounded heart? So you're asking God, I want to see this. We talked about how we can see it, His Word, alone, listen, counsel. So what are some red flags that we can look for that God will use to bring our attention to it? What are some signs of a wounded heart? Everybody's quiet this morning. Am I too serious? Do I need to crack a joke?
I'll crack a joke. I had a joke, but when you were talking about, what was it, a rejection? I had that Jim Carrey grinch with the dog with the nose. I reject you, so yeah.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah. You got distracted by word. So what are signs of a wounded heart? Say again, sir.
Someone who isolates themselves.
They want to get alone. They don't want to be around people because people might trigger them. That's good. That's real good. What else?
Anger.
Anger is the seedbed of every toxic emotion there is. Fear is a fruit of anger.
Bitterness.
What else? Rehearsing the same past trauma over and over again. You're just rehearsing it to the point where 90% of your conversation, I know people that when you get around them, and it's not that I don't care. This one person, I deeply could not care for this person any more than what I care for them. But 90% of their conversation is past traumas and hurts and wounds. That's a wounded heart. Because what's happened? They are trapped in 1975. They have not left 1975. Because in 1975, all hell broke loose. And they're still there. Pardon? Well, and the number one song on November 6, 1975 was by Casey and the Sunshine Band, and it was. Shake, shake, shake. Ba-da-da, ba-da-da, ba-da-da-da-da-da. Don't get me started. I want you to look us up sometime. Don't have to go there. Proverbs 17:22. It says this. Come in. Oh. We're not at home. A joyful heart is good medicine. A joyful heart is good medicine. But then notice this. We're talking about a heart. We're talking about a heart, right? A joyful heart is good medicine. But then look at the contrast. But a crushed spirit dries the bones up. Now, what is a medical term for things that dry the bones in the body up, just eats away at it?
Cancer.
Bitterness, a heart that is not joyful, is literally cancer on our soul and the body. Now, notice here, and I thought this is very amazing by Scripture. It starts off with a metaphysical reality, which is the heart, which is the way we believe, our desires, where we feel, and it moves it into the physical. So as I take care of the spiritual matters, the emotional matters, the wounds, the hurts, what happens? Physical matters. This has a direct effect on the physical matters. You know, modern medicine, science, you know, to the point you believe it, and I do on some of this, has a direct correlation between the way we think and the way we feel physically and what we're doing physically. Not that, you know, I don't want to get too far down it. Just because you have a sickness doesn't mean you have an emotional trauma or anything like that. But there is impact on it. So here's the thing. Here's the million-dollar question. There was a comedian from New York that got a lot of flack because he made some 9/11 jokes. How dare you joke about a national tragedy. How dare you joke about that? And he ignored it and just kept on with it. He's a stand-up routine. And you know, someone once said, comedy is not a victimless crime. Someone has got to get hurt. There's got to be a punchline. Someone's got to be the quote-unquote butt of the joke, right? That's the way it works, right? He'd go on, and he just started, in the world we live in, the Twitterverse and all this, people just started piling on, and it finally compelled him to come forward. So let me explain something. September 11th, 2001, my father was in Tower 2 and died. I was 12 years old at the time, I played Little League, and now all of a sudden, the man that taught me everything, threw ball with me in the backyard, was no longer, for no reason. And it's taking me years to get over that. But what I have discovered is I can have that memory control me for the rest of the life, or I can take that memory and start mocking it and say, you no longer control me. He says, and that's what I decided to do. A joyful heart. Now, I'm not saying not everything should be, you know, there's some things you shouldn't. I'm not advocating. But what I am saying is there is a spiritual truth here that when I can take something and say, ha, you thought you had me, and you can start making light of it, you're not my daddy. I'm your daddy. I say what is and what I assign the meaning to this matter, not you. That is taking control of a matter. Now, I'm not talking about denying reality and que sera sera and acting like nothing happened and getting into denial. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about confronting the pain, seeing what the venom is and saying, you don't have me anymore. That's powerful stuff. Moving right along because we got to get out of this because they're ringing me off the stage here. How to heal a wounded heart. I want to leave you with this, and we might have to, because this is deep here. Psalms 147:3, he heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. I tell you what, next week we'll start there. Y'all remind me. But in that passage right there, it goes back to last week when I was talking about how do I capture every thought, Lord? How do you say to capture these ideas when you say test the thoughts and I'm testing them and they're not measuring up? How do I? And he says it's in my passage. Capture it. And I was like, well, how do you do that? It's in the Word. So right here, how do you allow him and present yourself in a way that gives him permission? Where he says it's in Psalms 147:3. He heals the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. How he does it is right in there, and we'll talk about it next week when we get together. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for your word. Thank you for illuminating your word. Thank you for your healing. Thank you that you've called us not only your children, but your conquering disciples, a holy priesthood that's set apart, that's not just here to get by, but to hear to show your glory and your power in this world as we take the same arrows everybody else does, but it somehow just makes us stronger and better and more forgiving. Lord, make us everything you called us to be. Give us the grace to do so. And for everything that happens that's good in our life, we'll be careful to say it was all because of you. In your name we pray. Amen.